Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. How you doing? You're at the spot, the location, your favorite place where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Today, we are in Florida. Yes, beautiful Florida. We are with Ursula Pottinga. I'm so excited to have her here. She's a sister podcaster. We're going to talk about her show, but her zone of genius is really in neuroscience and working with executive, I'll say women, but you know, there might be some men that could use her help. Really kind of up level their game. What does that look like to be an executive coach? What does it look like to be a woman in leadership? I'm going to drill down on that leadership because you know what? It's not having followers. It is integrating ideas, mentoring, molding, positioning people to take your place. You know, you don't think about that. You always want to be the head and never be the tail, but you cannot be a good leader if you have never been a follower. So we're going to talk to her about that and a whole lot more. Welcome to the show, Ursula.
Well, thank you, April. I'm so excited to be here. We've really been looking forward to this moment with you.
I love your voice. It's so raspy and sexy.
I must be thirsty.
Well, no, I mean, you know, we're now originally, where is your country of origin, your country of birth?
Yeah, so I am originally from Germany, grew up in Germany, and then my husband and I spent 10 years in the UK and 10 years in Canada before we came to the United States. So I picked up a little bit of all the accents, you know, picked up a little bit from everywhere, I think.
Oh, that's good. So tell my brains, introduce yourself. Tell them how you show up in the world.
Well, I'm a neurotransformational coach, and I work in the space of leadership, particularly working with women that are really wanting to impact the culture of their organization, impacting the relationships, living with purpose and passion, and being more innovative in terms of creating new pathways forward. So these four pillars are the sort of the ground upon which my work rests, and I help them understand how their brains work and the brains of other people. Because when we understand what's going on, what I call underneath the hood, it makes understanding feelings, behaviors, and all that a lot easier, and definitely helps in terms of leadership.
Well, now people are really focusing and drilling down on neuroscience, especially with the integration of artificial intelligence. They feel that there has to be a competition there. And what they have to understand is that this machine is feeding off what is innately in our brains. But we have to be careful because it can be misconstrued. It can be manipulated.
Definitely.
So how do we bring these two technologies and forces and communication styles into a harmonious place to make it great in a leadership role?
Well, I think this is a really good point. It's not only in terms of AI, but in many ways relates to how we use assessments, how we use tools, how we generally use information, whether this is now AI or way back when first Facebook arrived on the scene and then, you know, LinkedIn. These are all tools. And I think sometimes there's a tendency to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's a tool that we can use with intentionality. But in my humble opinion, it will never replace a human. There is something in terms of emotions and how we feel each other through our mirror neuron system, through the heart's resonance field, that cannot be replaced by a machine. So our emotional intelligence that we are as humans, that come from the brain, from the heart, the gut, from the body, is something that is innately human. And that combined with any technology, whether it's AI or, as I said, assessment, email, the web, Google, these are all tools that can help us, create good work, function better, make life easier. And again, we as humans, we can't be replaced by robots because of
Yet.
our emotional intelligence.
I say yet. I never
Yet, I mean, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, and quite honestly, it's probably not going to happen in my lifetime. I mean, who knows? But
Well, you know, and it, I think about that too, but I look at how the world is evolving.
yeah, faster and faster and faster.
Every single day, I'm like, oh
Yeah.
my goodness, the
Yeah.
information streams. I know when my mother was alive, she didn't want to have anything to do with the internet because she said it was the devil. And I was like, wow, but she sure did love a GPS. When we get in the car, she said, can you program that so it can tell us where to, how to make the right, how to make the left? So again, we have to learn to live side by side.
Well, we have to be, so to your point in terms of GPS, I was having this conversation with my husband the other day because I said, do you remember when we would travel from Minneapolis, where we live the rest of the time, down to Florida, and we would have these maps that we would go to the Automobile Association, and we would give them starting point and end point, and they would print out these 40-page maps, and every 50 miles, I would flip over to the
I
next
know, I
page.
know.
And now we press a button, and it's I think with everything, whatever the change is, whether it's technology or change generally, we need to be open to the possibilities of what it can bring us, and we need to be discerning how to use it. And so certainly, I would never want to let go of my GPS now because
No.
it's just such a blessing. And
It is
I
a
think,
blessing, but what happens also, it's a handicap
it definitely is. Yeah,
because people,
absolutely.
my niece can't go, and she's been in my house a million times. She still programs it in. Or remembering a phone number.
I
Honestly,
know.
how many phone numbers do you remember in the head right now? I was with some little kids the other day and I said, well, do you know your mom's name? Yeah, mommy. I'm like, that's a dangerous thing. Do you know your home phone number? Do you know your address? It's programmed in the phone. So we
Well,
still have to use, as you said, we still have to use our mind, our
yeah.
brain.
Well, and this is a good point, April, in terms of programming, because this also transfers to the human brain. Because now we have no more neuroplasticity, we have no more neural pathways to find our way to the grocery store, because we just need to push the button and go like, okay, tell me where I need to go. So it is neural pathway related. And you're absolutely right. I used to try and orientate my brain and myself in a car by, here's the tree, and here's the shop, and here's the CVS, and I need to turn left and I need to turn right. And now my brain doesn't need to do that anymore. So in terms of creating pathways in the brain, it will eventually sort of let go of that and go like, oh, you have a machine for that. So
Right. And I do that. I'm calculating something and I said, I'm not going to use a calculator. I'm going to use my math skills. I'm going to write this out instead of type it out. I am determined to stimulate those neural
yes.
pathways in my brain, doing puzzles, learning a new instrument. These
Yeah.
things are critical because we see so many people that are just at early ages falling into states of dementia or Alzheimer's. They don't exercise this great muscle called a brain. How did you find yourself in the neuroscience arena from the get-go?
Oh, this is a very, very, very good question. So I have been a certified coach, trained to a well-known coaches training institute, happens to be actually based in California, 20 years ago, and this is how I started my journey as a coach. I have a business partner. Her name is Anne. We've created a separate company called Be Above Leadership. And about 10 years ago, after we both had been working together, training and delivering, various workshops, mainly in the nonprofit area, at one point, Anne came to me and she said, "You know, I came across something really interesting, and this is, how our brain works, neuroscience." And she said, as I looked into it, "I think there might be a connection to neuroscience and coaching." And she said to me, and I will never forget that, she said to me, "I'm going to sign up at the Neuro Leadership Institute, and I'm going to study neuroscience for a year. Do you want to join me?" And I remember I was outside taking my dog for our dog for a walk. And I said to her, first word out of my mouth was, "That's not how my brain works. You will have to do this on your own."
Wow.
Well, a couple of weeks later, she would start and she would come back after these sessions that she had, and she would say, "You have no idea what I've learned. And here is the connection. And I think here is what this is." And after a week or two, I would say, "I can feel a coaching tool coming on." And so she basically inspired me into this field of neuroscience and leadership, neuroscience and coaching. And then we expanded into the field of neuroscience and consciousness. And the more we talked, the more I got inspired and curious. And now here we are, 10 years later, and we have studied together, read, God knows how many books, and really basically looking for the application in human development. So we are not neuroscientists, we are translators of the research and the material and making it digestible and applicable to coaches and to human development. And that's our strength.
That's great niche, because that's a caveat, an additional layer to coaching. A lot of time,
Yes.
and I say this with love, coaches, that word is oversaturated. A lot of times you have coaches that are still players on the bench,
Yes.
have disgruntled employees that leave a company, and now all of a sudden they become the subject matter expert. You have people that want to coach and have good intentions, but they have not done the work like you and Anne. Brains, what you have to understand is that when you coach someone, it's like parenting them. It's in between a therapist and a teacher.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, April. I think what I really want to highlight here in this moment is that dear listeners, when you are looking for a coach, make sure that they have gone through a ICF accredited coach training school. It is incredibly important that you hire a coach who has been trained as a coach, because it's a profession that needs training, just like an accountant or a lawyer. You wouldn't hire or go to a dentist that hasn't been, gone to dentist school, or hire an accountant that's not a certified accountant. Why would you entrust your thoughts, your feelings, your goals, your dreams to someone who isn't trained in knowing how to create this coaching space? And it's a very specialized field. And so, hire a coach who's done their work and who is certified. Then you'll get a quality, you get quality coaching.
And I also say, hold them accountable. Hold them accountable. Have the questions for them. Ask them what is keeping them on the cutting edge. Who's pouring into them? How are they sharp? Because they are supposed to be one step ahead of you. My thought and my philosophy is, when I get a coach or a mentor, I want to see what they have exuding out of their pores. I want to essentially outgrow them. I want to be a little bit better than they are, because I'm coming to them for consultation. That's me. I'm challenging. But you have to work with them. They have to, have a communication style that works with you.
Yes.
And it's not a friendship. You
No.
develop a friendship, but you know, when you go into the NBA or the NFL, you're not, they're not saying, oh, you know, you're just a really great guy, come on board. No,
Yeah.
they're looking at your skills, your
Yes.
talents, your dedication, your commitment, and consistency. That is what makes the cake rise, I do believe.
Yes, no, I agree. And you know, clients come to coaching for expansion and for change. I mean, coaching really equals change. Every client I have comes to me because there's something they want to either expand on or something they want to change. And so I think in that respect, the neuroscience really helps because I can give them an insight into how the brain works that will make change a little easier and also less, what is the word? It's normalizes the struggle of change. Once you understand that it's your brain at work, it normalizes the fact that sometimes we're resistant to change. It can be really hard. It can take a long time. It can be downright frustrating. But once you understand that it's just about neuroplasticity, it's a lot easier to lean in and say, okay, I can find the patience and the time to keep going on this journey.
How do you find, you're a woman, I'm a woman, how do you find working with women in leadership today? It has evolved and it has changed. The struggle is real, as we
Yes.
say.
Yes.
This is the age of Aquarius, which, you know, is a much gentler time. We just are thawing out from COVID. We
Yeah.
are in an age of the great resignation. Nobody wants to go back to work in a
Yeah.
brick and mortar anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do we reward and recognize the work that an individual is doing offsite? It's different when you can, you know, meander through the office and look over someone's shoulder, or they're in a group, a meeting, and you're, you know, you're in the same room. There's a different energy when you're in the same room versus when you're doing this telepathically through the computer, you know. So what does that leadership look like now, and what is the expectation of a leader?
Well, it's this is really a change with a huge capital C, because leaders, you know, at this stage need to be inspiring. They cannot, it doesn't work anymore to tell people constantly what they should be doing and, you know, using the whip. Especially the younger generation is way more leaning into what is my purpose? What is my passion? How do I balance work and life? I mean, I'm still of a generation, and I originally have a hotel management background. Both my husband and I are of a generation where, you know, working 10 hours, working on weekends, moving, being transferred. This is, you know, how we ended up, you know, in the UK in different locations, in Canada in different locations. We would just say, you know, the company would say, okay, you've outgrown this position, now we're moving you here. And it would never have occurred to us to say no. That is not true anymore. In this working environment, people need to really connect to, I like my work and I like the people I'm working with. There is far less tolerance to BS.
Yeah, no, you're
Luckily.
absolutely right. I was having this
Luckily.
conversation with my husband. He's got 2 weeks before he is completely retired. He retired from 20 years from the military, and now in 25 years in civilian role. And so he's like 45 years, and he looked at me and my daughter, and he says, you know, you two are very innovative. I love the way that you market and promote yourself, that you followed your dream. He says, me, I'm more rigid. I'm more mechanical. I have been, you know, especially with the military discipline, I go in, I do my work, I wear my uniform, I come in, I know what's expected of me day by day by day. There's, you know, I can put my input, but it's really already a structure there.
Yeah.
I'm finding with the millennials, Generation Z, Generation Alpha, They want it quick and slick. They don't want this whole dissertation about, you know, when I was 15, I walked 40 miles in the snow. They don't care anything about that. They want to know what happened when you got to that destination.
Yes.
They want it in bite-sized pieces.
Yeah.
They want flexibility to where they are not chained to a desk, that they can work from their device. They can work on an airplane. They can work on it. And what is the quality of the work? What am I doing? How am I being a contributor to society as a whole? Not so much. They don't want the big house. They want the tiny house. You know?
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's a really different value
it's
system.
Different values. But what
Very,
happens,
very
what I
different.
found, is that a lot of times people are stuck in that old way of thinking.
Yes.
And it's not, it becomes combative. And then they will accuse others of being lazy or not, you know, not being committed. It used to be you would be at a company and you just knew if you were there 20 years, you were going to get a pension.
Yes,
That's not it
that's
now.
not going to happen anymore.
I was reading somewhere they said if you are with a company for 5 years now, it's a goal.
Yeah.
So, you know, taking all this into consideration, there is a new type of leadership. And that's what you said, being inspired, being
Yes.
motivated, looking at the future. All of
Yeah.
these things are very important.
Yeah, leaders need different tools and a different mindset. There's, you know, a different skill set and a different mindset at work in order to also not only connect with, you know, a different generations, not only one different generations, but multiple different generations who all have different values, who have a different mindset. So the leader of today needs to be a lot more agile in terms of what do these people want that are working for me? And being a lot more open and more flexible to change. You know, the old scenarios don't work anymore. Now, having said that, there are some more traditional companies like, you know, banking, law firms that are still a little bit stuck in this. Well, this is just the way it is. So I think in terms of cultural shifts, and this is a little bit like, you know, the Titanic hitting the iceberg. There's companies that, you know, depending on size, that are just a juggernaut, and it takes a long, long time to amend and correct the course. And so there is a huge challenge there. There might be teams, there might be little silos, there might be individual leaders that are really getting it. But if the general culture doesn't come along with that new mindset and a new skill set, then it is going to be a big, big struggle for the individual to really, really impact the culture, the relationships, and create this innovative path forward. And that's a challenge I find that I deal with in terms of coaching my executives is saying, okay, I'm in this culture, I want to make these changes, but there are other people that are sort of still stuck in the old way, and it's holding me back.
You know, a big shift was the dress code. Do you
Yeah.
remember? Wait, you'd go to work, and I mean, you needed to look a certain type of way.
Yeah.
And now you go in and you're thinking that this person is at a sporting event. And I guess I'm kind of stuck in the old way because I dress for success. I want to see people put a little effort into it, but I understand. And also, we have to think globally. You know,
absolutely.
It can't be stuck in the isms. It can't be classism, racism, sexism. We have to get beyond that. I mean, we have diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's a big picture. I don't want to just be a headcount. I don't want to be the black woman that you tick off the box. I want a seat at the table.
Yeah,
I
and
want to be able, I don't care. You know, you're older, younger, and a lot of companies now are even going back to older, or should I say more mature employees, because they want that work ethic and that dedication to their corporation so that they can flourish. They want to embed that in this generation.
Well, and this is an interesting point. You know, when we think about diversity, I think we need to really expand that picture, because in terms of, you know, diversity, there is, you know, there's race, there is, you know, religion, there is, you know, countries, cultural
Sexuality.
backgrounds, sexuality. I mean, it's a huge bucket. And I agree with you. It in also includes, in terms of diversity, can also include age. Now, you know, my husband, who's been now retired for a number of years, used to be a, you know, high level executive in the hotel industry,
Then
and
he can hang out with my husband.
well, he comes with a ton of experience. I mean, it's really, he is a wellspring of leadership experience. He's traveled the world, you know, managed, you know, hundreds of hotels, you know, hundreds of employees. And it's a little bit of a shame that these leadership capabilities are not being used just because he is of a certain age. So I think even there, we need to expand our vision a little bit more and saying, you know, maybe this person doesn't want to work full time. Well, is that a big deal? Maybe this person only wants to work one day a week. And
Right.
so even there, you know, cultures and structures are sort of stuck in the old way. You know, work 5 days a week, 40 hours, take
Right.
the weekend or 9 to 5 or whatever it is, instead of introducing some flexibility and looking at what is the contribution this person can make,
Right.
rather than, you know, what is the form that this will take, but looking at this is the experience we want. The form doesn't matter.
That's like me. When I coach, I only coach 5 people a year, and I only coach for about 5 to 10 hours. I'm looking for someone that is already embedded, and I'm looking at it from a helicopter view. I want to sharpen your knife. I don't want it to change you. That works for me. Also, mentoring. I find that we'll use Politrix as an example. I don't see on any side of the spectrum that they are cultivating the next group of leaders. No, I mean they're stuck. They're just stuck in the old ways, and we cannot do that. We are going into the 22nd century. We can't do that anymore. Those
No.
old ways and the philosophies. Let's talk about the dress code. I know that there was one congressman that was elected not too long ago, and he would come in shorts, a sweatshirt, and sit there and expect to be taken seriously. And you got the whole world looking at you. So I don't see mentorship, even in big corporations. Who is the next generation? Because we're all organic. We all have an expiration date.
Yeah.
We're going to die. We're going to die off, okay?
Yeah.
Hopefully we planted some good seeds and cultivated our soil. But if we have not, what do you say to the leaders of today about even mentoring, not necessarily coaching, but sharing that knowledge? That's like your husband.
Yeah.
He's got a well of
Yeah.
information. We don't
And
want to expire or, just fall off.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think there's a huge mistake that companies make. You know, this also points to what you were saying early on, the great resignation. Every time a person leaves, they take a whole filing cabinet of knowledge and wisdom with them, and there's not enough structure that really helps, you know, particularly leaders and long-term employees. Share the stories, share the experience, share the struggle. There needs to be a way that this is documented in story form. And there's very few companies that are really, really intentional about that, so that the wisdom and the knowledge of this individual gets captured. And then, in terms of, you know, when you are a leader, I think what you're pointing to, April, is, you know, don't be such an egomaniac that you think you are the only one that can solve this problem or lead this team. There are other people that might be doing things differently. They are most likely just as talented, but they just need to be given a bit more free rein and encouragement to step in, to experiment. Yeah, they might be making a mistake, But mistakes are good for the brain because it shows us that we are on a new pathway. And if we keep doing just the same thing again and again in the hope that nobody makes a mistake, well, that's not going to work eventually. So, leaders need to let go of I will do it and I can only do it and
Right.
create some time because mentoring takes time to say, here's potential, and I want to develop this potential for the sake of them and long-term sustainability. But
Absolutely.
it takes it, but leaders need to not hold on so tight.
Right. They do.
Right.
And you know, it's I love to see someone that I have mentored flourish. I love to see that aha moment in them when the light bulb goes off. I love when they bring me new ideas that challenge my way of thinking. That is what growth and development is, brains. We're only here on this planet for two reasons. One is to learn, and the other is to teach
And the other is to love.
and to love. Three. Absolutely. But if you don't do those, you know, you're jacked up like a soup sandwich.
That's an interesting metaphor. I get the
Yeah,
visual.
that's pretty ready. So tell us a little bit about the podcast.
So the podcast, I interview leaders, various backgrounds. Sometimes I interview coaches, and it really is around the four pillars of my work, which I mentioned earlier on, which is impacting cultures, impacting relationships, passion and purpose, and forging new pathways forward. So that these are the four sort of pillars of the profound growth path. And sometimes I, pick one of the pillars and focus on that, interview people, we have lively conversations just like this one. Or, as my recent podcast, I interviewed a good friend of mine who is the head of a marketing firm. And she said, well, I want to talk about all four because they all need to be put together. And I said, oh, that's a good idea. So let's do that. So that's basically what we do. And there's obviously always a neuroscience underpinning there. So I try and shed some lights on the topic and what my guests are sharing and give little neuroscience tidbits so people can
What is
learn a
the
little bit.
name of the podcast and where can it be located?
It's a profoundgrowth.com. So it's on my website and it's called What's Coming Into Focus. So it's on the it's profoundgrowth.com. There is a drop-down menu where the podcast can be found, and it's also on Spotify.
Okay, well, brains, we want you to tune in and get turned up. So before we conclude, Ursula, I want to ask you some fun questions. This is my
Okay.
favorite part of the interview.
All right, bring it on.
Okay, if you could time travel, where would you land? Past, present, future, and why?
So I can be in the present as well. I don't have to go anywhere.
Go anywhere.
I am a fan of historical fiction. So I enjoy history, the 18th century, especially women who were, struggling against 18, 20, 18, 30, 40, the rigid structure that women couldn't vote, they didn't have a voice. That is really something that fascinates me, but I don't think I would want to time travel in there because it just sounds like such an enormous struggle.
Oh, you know, and I think about that too because you are originally from Germany, where
Yes.
I find as a world traveler, you preserve your history a lot
Yes.
than what we
Yes.
do in the United States. I mean,
Yeah.
you know, we'll tear down a building,
Yeah.
we'll burn books, we will, you know,
Yeah.
just etch things out instead of really cultivating,
Yeah.
again, as we talked about, that history and preserving that because
Yeah.
you know what's happened before.
Yeah.
Have a precursor to what may happen in the future again if you're not aware. So that's pretty interesting. If
Yeah.
you were a flower in the garden, what flower would you be?
A tulip. My husband is from the Netherlands, and so tulips are a big deal in our family. We recently came back from the Netherlands, from a trip with our family. And we bought a beautiful original painting that a Dutch painter painted. We brought it home. It's hanging in our dining room. So tulips are, a big deal. And I love their quirkiness when you put them in a vase and they tend to sort of flop over and
Oh, they
they're
go wild. That's one of my favorite
yeah,
flowers.
they come in all colors. So
And
I love tulips.
men love tulips too. So if you ever want to get your man some flowers, Brains, get him some tulips. If you were an appliance in the garden, I mean in the kitchen, what appliance would you be?
What appliance would I be? The first thing that popped into my mind, so my brain must be already, there must be something in it. I would be a, what do you call them when you make a smoothie? One of those smoothie makers.
Like a Vitamix
Yeah,
or
like a Vitamix. And
Vitamix.
I don't know why, but I think maybe it is that you can put all kinds of fruit and vegetables in it, and when you press a button, something very healthy comes out of it. So it's a little bit how my work is, I think. I take different tools and give them to my clients, and then they take it home into the kitchen of their life. And hopefully, when they press the button, something good comes out.
I think I want to be a dishwasher.
Oh, really? Oh,
I
why
think
is that?
they're hot, they're steamy, they keep you clean, but they're also very helpful and useful, and they do things that, that other people may not want to do.
Yeah, that is very
Dishwasher.
good. I like the hot and steamy.
Pretty fun.
Is funny.
If you were an animal, what animal would you be?
Well, I love giraffes. They are one of my favorite animals. I have two little granddaughters. They're 6 and 9 years old, and they know that Oma loves giraffes. So when I get emojis, they usually there's usually a giraffe involved. I again, they're sort of a little bit like the tulip. They're tall and gangly. They're colorful. They're very unique. And they can really see the world from up above. And I like that. The big picture view from up there, looking, from this high point and looking down.
They're very nurturing. They're good parents. They're vegetarian.
Yes. Yes.
They have a grace about them. They're not an aggressive type of animal. I mean, I
Yeah,
could go to
they.
the zoo at any time. We got a beautiful zoo here in San Diego.
Yes,
And I
you
never
do.
see the giraffes. You may see the gorillas or the rhinos or whatever. They're bumping heads and stuff. But the giraffe is just always there, just kind of loving and nurturing. So I could see that. I could see
Yeah,
that.
they're sort of, and I like how they walk, they're sort of meandering.
Right. They are. I think I'd be the party animal.
A giraffe can be that.
Exactly. No, I think I'd be an elephant. I think I'd be an elephant,
You
much
know,
like
that
a
would
giraffe.
be definitely would be my second choice. They have a long memory, which I love, and yeah, they are very, very, they're wonderful animals.
And in closing, Ursula, what do you want to leave as your legacy?
Really, really good question. I think I would want to be known as generous and sharing the gifts that I have with the world, and in small ways, leaving humans better than they came. So having an impact in terms of consciousness and awareness, in terms of human development, and the ripple effect that hopefully it will create, that each person that I have an impact on, they will have an impact on other people. And so that ripple effect spreads for, greater connection, greater presence, kindness. That's what I would hope I can leave behind.
Well, I think that you have done that in so many ways. You are leaving an imprint on my heart and on my mind. You're
Thank
making me
you.
think. You're making me appreciate what I do, more so how I mentor, how I lead from the podcast perspective, developing content, sharing information
Yes.
with the young, the old, diversity, equity, inclusion. We're going to put it all in this Vitamix.
Yeah, and press the button.
Press the button. We're going to grow wild like tulips. And we are really going to try to mentor and mold and understand.
Yes.
Allow people the capacity to agree or disagree, but not show up disagreeable.
Yes.
That is how we learn. That is how we love.
Yeah.
It's as simple
I absolutely, absolutely agree.
So thank you so much, Ursula, for being here on The Edge with me. I got goose pimples. I'm going to give you a big old virtual hug. Tell my brains how to get in contact with you, how to work with you if you have any current offerings, and how to follow you on social media.
Yes, thank you. I'm on LinkedIn, just Ursula Pottinger, and follow and like my podcast is one of the best ways you can support my work. Take a look at the website. I also have a newsletter, and when you sign up for it, I have created a really, really nice journal that relates to the four pillars, where people can really self-reflect, write about their dreams, their vision, and who they want to be as a leader. So that's a gift when you sign up for the newsletter that comes out once a month.
Well, brains, run, don't walk.
Thank you. Thank
Absolutely.
You so much, April. It was super fun. I so appreciate you. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you too. Brains, go in, take a look, do your due diligence. You don't know what you don't know. And you don't know everything, okay? There's always an opportunity to expand your brand, your bandwidth, but also exercise this thing called a brain. Work that muscle. And if not, share the information that you have with someone else. You don't have to be a neuroscientist. You don't have to be, a doctor or a lawyer. You can just be a good, kind human being. Share some love. Thank you so much, Ursula. Come back
Thank you.
again, okay?
Yes, we'd love to. Thank you, April. Bye-bye.
My brains.